Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Derek Zhu and Jeff Wright back here with you. Jeff, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Man, I'm floating right along. I had a busy week last week. I've got a busy week this week, but it's more flexible, and I'm going to talk to you about a very pleasant surprise. So things are well on my side of the microphone connection. How are you?
Good. I'm good, man. We are slowing down at the Stampede for a little bit, which will be nice. You know, this is the nice calm before the storm that is Christmas.
And, okay, gotcha.
COVID Christmas, I don't know what that's going to look like. You know, we usually do on Saturdays, we usually do 5 shows a day through the Christmas season. But now that we're doing only half capacity, I have a feeling they're going to try to figure out a way for us to do 10 shows a day.
Right.
To get all that money. So I am counting my blessings that at least for the majority of this week, we're only going to do 1 show a day, which is a nice break for myself and the other performers and the horses.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll stay through September, you know, maybe do a couple shows on a Saturday, but most, you know, through the week we do 1 show. So anyway, I say all that to say this, it's been a crazy, you know, 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, but things are finally starting to slow down on my end. And that is very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I hope you get a little breathing space then.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. There's a lot of stuff I'm trying to get done for the 2021 year. And now that I've got a little more time on my hands, I think I'm going to be able to get it accomplished. So
cool.
Excited, man.
Cool, cool, cool. Well,
yep.
Get on it.
Yeah, yes, sir. I sure will.
We're all waiting to see it, so go.
Yeah, you got it, man. Make the hat. Hey, I was wanting to ask you this, and I didn't have the chance, but I noticed that at the Sparta Drive-In, they kind of stole our gimmick, man.
Yeah, I can't even talk about it. I wanted to go, and it just couldn't work out. This was the worst weekend of the year for me to try to fit something like that in. I have been in recent weeks to a drive-in to watch Goonies and Empire Strikes Back, and I feel like I leveled up on my Americana rating, you know? But they did, I guess, Nightmare on Elm Street and Stephen King's It this past weekend. And, dude, I should have been there. We should have been hosting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did Beetlejuice on Friday.
Oh, did they? That's fun.
Yeah. I was really disappointed that I wasn't able to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know what? I remember that now because you put it in the Facebook group.
Yeah.
I call that the before times because that last week was that nuts. I saw it and then I disappeared into a different reality.
I understand that. We still need to try sometime soon. Maybe not this year, obviously, with the world being as crazy as it is. But sometime soon, we still need to do that movie marathon at the drive-in, Sparta drive-in.
For sure. And I mean, I don't think this is any kind of like big news because it was very peremptory. But Joe Bob Briggs is in my DMs about, you know, I'd reached out to be like, would you do a horror hosting at a drive-in for real? And he reached back out. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep that in our back pocket for sure. So, all right. Well, hey, the world is opening back up slowly but surely. There are no new trailers that I saw, but I do know we got some Horror Reporter news. So hit me with your best shot. This week's
Horror Reporter. Yeah, man, I take the items I've got for this week as just what you said. I don't want to get, you know, my anticipation out too far because 2020 has shown a remarkable ability to, you know, bite you when you start thinking things might be looking up. But I think the world may be trying to open up a bit. And I guess actually, as I'm thinking about that, even I just want to say if any of our listeners are in Iowa dealing with that inland hurricane, or if you're in California, Nevada dealing with that huge fire, and I saw a fire tornado footage as well. You know, we understand things are tough in different parts of the world. You have our sympathies, our thoughts, our prayers. But on the other side of those tragedies, it looks like we're starting to see some signs of life coming out of Hollywood. This is low stake, nothing that needs comment, but Universal just released new stills from Jurassic World Dominion and indicated that filming is resuming. So I'm excited for that. I know the last movie wasn't as delightful to everybody, but a new Jurassic Park movie looks pretty sweet right now. I don't know if you're with me on that train, but I'll take it.
Yeah, man, I'm there. I wasn't a huge fan of the way that one ended.
Sure.
I mean, you give me Chris Pratt, you give me dinosaurs, and you give me Jeff Goldblum, I'm all over it.
Yep. Similar fashion, not much that can be done with this now, but as we're recording just an hour or so ago, maybe a little bit more, Mike Flanagan tweeted that production has begun right now on his Midnight Mass. And I don't know if you remember that one, but it's got a ton of people from Hill House.
Okay.
It's also got Alex Esso from Dr. Sleep. And so it's kind of a Flanagan family reunion, and it's
Cool.
It's starting. So maybe in like 9 months or whatever, we'll get some more Flanagan. I'm here for that.
Have you revisited Dr. Sleep since we originally reviewed it?
Yes. My wife wanted to see it, and I watched it with her. And then some friends of mine in a different context, who I basically only know online, reached out and said, hey, tell me about this Dr. Sleep movie. They had went on sort of a staycation. So they'd rented property somewhere, but, you know, most of the world was shut down. So they spent most of the time at this rental property inside. And they said, tell me about Dr. Sleep. And I just said, hey, just go watch it. Just go watch it. And you come back and talk to me. And they were quite happy. So I guess it's pretty fresh in my mind, actually. What about you?
Yeah, I had an early night last week, and so I was doing some meal prep and some laundry and stuff, and I threw it on. And man, I still love the majority of that movie.
Yeah,
it's still so, so good. But when they get to the Overlook, it just peters out for me.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, and you're right. That's the weakness in the movie. I guess I'm also right where I was when we reviewed it. It's the best version of trying to tie all the threads together. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if that was completely satisfying. I certainly wouldn't have had possessed Ewan walking around. But I do think that considering the stakes and what all he had to adapt, pretty happy.
Yeah. And honestly, if we could ever get a Rose the Hat prequel,
yeah,
man, I'd be all for that.
Yeah. My friend specifically mentioned her. He said that was incredible.
Yeah.
Can't remember that actress's name off the top of my head, but he was bragging about her.
Rebecca Ferguson is her name.
Well done, Miss Ferguson. Hey, two items. Speaking of production companies we love to various degrees, we got our first look at Blumhouse's first four films for the Welcome to the Blumhouse films they're doing for Amazon Studios.
Okay,
and I guess we've got titles: The Lie, Black Box, Evil Eye, and Nocturne. And if you get on comingsoon.net. And look, you can find a whole bunch of production stills. And so I'm guessing these things are pretty far down the development rabbit hole. And we might get to see those things fairly soon.
Okay. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, just seeing new images from Blumhouse films that weren't tabled by the quarantine is pretty exciting. And surely Blumhouse's deal with Amazon is going to be better than Hulu's deal with the devil for the holiday franchise thing they keep trying to make a thing.
I love Into the Dark.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, speaking of Hulu and good content, the first season of Dark Side of the Ring is on Hulu right now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, YouTube TV jacked their price up again, so I may be looking at that Hulu ESPN Disney Plus bundle.
Yeah. If you're interested in professional wrestling and true crime sort of documentaries and stuff, man, I highly recommend Dark Side of the Ring. And the episode, I think you've seen it already too, but the episode on Bruiser Brody is one of the most shocking and eye-opening and heartbreaking things I've ever seen.
Yeah, that whole story is just buck wild, man. Wild, tragic, terrible. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I think watching that episode of Dark Side of the Ring was scarier than like half the movies that we've reviewed this year, just for the divots in Abdullah the Butcher's head.
Oh, Abby. Abby is taking a few blade jobs.
Man, I tell you, that, like, there's not enough money in the world for me to carve my head up the way he has.
Man, I think we actually talked about Abby on last episode, but I think he just likes that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Tissue paper forehead is a small price to pay for Mr. Abdullah the Butcher.
I guess so, dude. But like, he legit looks like I know that there's a supposed coin shortage in the world. I think it's all just in the divots in his head. Like, he's just saved it up for so long.
Yeah, this is not take a shot at Abdullah the Butcher hour. My thought when I saw him was, can we not like graft skin from your butt onto your head?
Sure.
Like, can we just get some fatty tissue stuck back up on top of your face? You know what I mean? Yeah. But you know what? Abdullah the Butcher isn't taking fashion or complexion advice from Jeff Wright, and I don't blame him.
Yeah. But you know, if you look, like, if you watch that episode, I didn't realize it either, but Brody's head was carved up like that too. And you know, Dusty had some markings on his head as well. So I guess that's just, you know, kind of the mark of courage, like the badge of courage for the, you know, wrestlers in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, I definitely don't have that badge. If I were a professional wrestler, I just would not work with color. I'd be like, nope, yeah. I don't care who's got the razor blade. It's not happening. Yeah. The Brody thing is weird. I don't think Abdullah the Butcher had a long-term plan for life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But Brody clearly did.
Yeah.
He wanted to eventually have a life beyond the ring. And so it is a little bit more odd for him. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that plan came together after he already got pretty far down the scar tissue road. But it's still a strange deal for a guy who knew he wanted to get out by a time in life where he would have some good years ahead of him. And that kind of makes the whole thing that went down with him even more tragic.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, off that dark and somber note, good news, man. I'm sure you're aware of this. I haven't checked it out yet, but Jordan Peele's Lovecraft Country made its debut last night on HBO, and I had people impromptu reach out to me today telling me how good it was, wanting to know what I thought, and I had to tell them I haven't watched it yet because my weekend's been psycho, but Lord willing, that's what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, I started it after work last night and got about 5 minutes into it and realized that I didn't have the headspace to watch it, so I'm going to watch it today. I'm excited though, man. I think it's going to be great. I've heard nothing but good things about it. So really pumped.
Yeah. I did not finish The Twilight Zone, and I will at some point, but I just realized the Jordan Peele I like best is the Jordan Peele who is not working for a major network television company, I guess. Like there's a sort of the gloves are on feeling to Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready to see him back on, you know, either major motion picture or something like HBO that'll give him some room to spread his wings.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Now how much of this is he involved in? Is he just like the producer on it? Because, you know, we've talked about this in the past before where, if it's not just his, if he's not writing and directing it, then it's not going to be the same as a Get Out or an Us or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
It looks like he wrote one episode. He is the creator of it, and it looks like that he wrote the pilot episode.
Okay. Well, no wonder everybody loved that first episode then.
Yeah. And he did not direct any of them as of right now.
Boo hiss. You know what? Yeah. Can't kill my good vibe, though, dude. I've got Jordan Peele Connected Horror to watch, and it's on HBO, and I'm just going to assume it's going to be a good thing.
Absolutely, man. I think it will be, too. I always want to make that... I always want to make that clarification just because, like, I know there's been some things that Peele has been like produced, and because he's produced it, you know, he's the big name, right?
Sure.
So they're like, from Jordan Peele. And then people think, oh, this is Jordan Peele. He wrote and directed it. And then it doesn't get like the best reviews. And they're like, oh man, Jordan Peele's lost his fastball. No, he hasn't. Don't say stuff like that.
For sure. Well, that's a good caveat. And I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm also going to check out that HBO documentary, I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Yes.
About the East Area Rapist and whatnot. It's a gruesome subject, but a fascinating story. And I'm all about some true crime. So there's good stuff to watch, man. Good stuff to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think when Lovecraft Country has ended its first season, I think that's the thing that we need to talk about on here.
Yep. That sounds good to me, buddy. We'll just make that a plan. Well, speaking of good things, that is all I have.
This has been this week's Horror.
And so, do you want to pull the curtain on 2020s?
Pull the string on host.
I don't know if we could have more awkwardly talked over each other there, and so I'll just take full responsibility for that. Man, you picked this movie out, and you did us a solid. I probably wouldn't have watched this if you hadn't said, let's check this one out.
Yeah, before we get into that, Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, man, I had seen some buzz about this from some people that I trust as far as horror content goes, and... I couldn't remember the name of it, and you had thrown out a couple suggestions for a movie, and then against my better judgment, I subscribed to Shudder, and which has since been rectified. And so I was flipping through Shudder trying to find the original movie that you had suggested, and then I saw the, you know, the avatar or what have you, profile picture, whatever, for host. And I was like, dang, that's got to be it. And so I'm glad that we pivoted, man, because here's the thing that I think will shock the majority of our listeners. We are in the year 2020 and things have been crazier than they've ever been before. And to just keep that motif going, I enjoyed a found footage movie.
Brother, I totally get that. It's not a genre you've had a lot of good stuff to say about. And this movie deserves it. This movie deserves sort of a reconsideration, at least on its own merits, right? That the genre and the format shouldn't hold it down, because it was well done.
Yeah, it was. And I've learned about myself that if found footage is done right, there's still some meat on the bone. But also, I think that you could do a anthology series on found footage stuff, and I think you could make it pretty good, because this hour-long format was all they needed.
Yeah, that's a strength of this film, isn't it? Just you get in, you get to it, you get out, and you're done. Very much so.
I was very, very well pleased with, like, you establish the characters, you establish the relationship, you see who's who, you have your, you know, you have your problem that comes up, and then ish hits the fan, and then you're out. And there's no, you know, there's no day 47 of watching the children sleep, you know, there's nothing like that in it. So, yeah, dude, if this is the kind of like found footage we're going to go with, as long as it's not run into the ground like everything else, I'm for it.
Well, I don't know that we can protect you from it not getting run into the ground. This movie was made for no money very quickly. It has done super well. There's a bidding war for it, and they're already talking about a sequel. So, I mean, be prepared. Be prepared for this to be ground to powder.
Well, it was good while it lasted.
Yeah. Yeah, you referenced the failures of the Paranormal Activity franchise. And listeners who are Patreon peeps, I have not forgotten you on the Tokyo Nights version of this. It's going to happen. I just got to have every other boss I have in my life give me just a little breathing room. So I'll be back to that. But on the last Paranormal Activity episode we did, I posited the idea that if they're going to do another film, they ought to switch to police body cam footage.
Mm-hmm.
That seems so silly now. Like, it looks like this screen grabbing genre is the clear pivot if they want to try it. But you know what that'll be?
What's that?
That'll be the exact moment when this is done to death and ground into powder. Like,
yeah,
we will know. That's the canary in the coal mine. Coal mine, not mind. Yeah.
Well, both, really.
Did you see the viral video that this movie was based on?
I did not. I watched this movie last night and wanted to track it down, and then honestly just lost track of time this morning, so I wasn't able to. Were you able to see it?
I watched a YouTube video that kind of had the big hits out of it.
Okay.
And it's fascinating. I totally missed it when it went around.
Yeah.
So, listener, if you missed it too, the director of Host basically pranked his friends by convincing them during the height of the quarantine that he had a killer living up in his ceiling and he needed to go investigate it, and, you know, Zoom pranked them into believing a monster in his ceiling killed him. You know what that tells me?
What's up?
I need better friends. Why have none of my friends tried to convince me a serial killer killed them? A serial killer living in their attic. I don't know what I've done wrong in life to reach this point where no friends are willing to do that for me.
I'm sorry, I failed you.
Now, I don't blame you. You have helped me create a enjoyable podcast. This is not on your shoulders. It's all those losers who've been dead waiting my friendship for years.
Yeah, well, that's true. Bunch of hangers on.
It's right out of this movie, too. So, listener, if this is new to you and you want to check this out, the Twitter sphere is the place to find this. The handle for the director is DIR Rob Savage, spelled just like it sounds. And the video went up on April 21st of 2020. So,
hey, and can I submit to you that I think that this was a shock for most people, because no one that I know knew anything about this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fun watch after this movie. A couple things I didn't realize. You know, the scene where one of the young ladies decides she needs to go check out her own attic.
Mm-hmm. Caroline.
It's basically replicated, or I say replicated. The prank came first. So he got the idea from the prank. He does it in his own attic. And it's a little bit more shocking in the prank than it is in this, because it's the big payoff to the prank video. Here it's just, you know, world building in the mm-hmm. film. But it's good. It works, man. The jump scare works. And he apparently let his friends believe for quite some time so he could record their reactions. And a bunch of those friends are the people who are in the movie.
Huh. How about that?
Yeah. Radina or whatever her name is in there. And there's a couple more. I think the woman who plays Jenna. So it's a fun watch. It's like a prequel.
Mm. Well, cool, man. I'll have to track that down then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gave all that Twitter information. I'm sure Google can cut to it much quicker, but
sure.
Anyway, it's out there.
That's great, man. I'm going to try to track that down right now so I can watch it when we get done. I thought that this was really, really well done. And it's crazy to me. Like, do you feel like that, not necessarily the found footage or whatever, but do you feel like that this is evolutionary for not only horror or not only found footage, but also for filmmaking in itself? So, I mean, this thing was what it took them like 12 weeks from idea to premiere, I think, yeah, to get this thing off the ground and going.
Yeah, that really just seems to be the continuation of the found footage ethos. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I can gush, though, just a little bit, too, it is such a like testimony to the power of the creative spirit that humankind holds. I'm not trying to be grandiose here, but when he was making that prank video, the world sucked and nobody knew what was going to happen. We're still kind of there, but we definitely were in like the early shockwaves of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And these guys figured out how to be creative, how to be collaborative, how to draw people in. And it, you know, from that prank video, it, like you said, evolves into something that got people employed. You know, people worked across great distances to make this stuff happen, where like some of the actresses had to learn how to make set pieces move on their own or put on their own special effects makeup. And you just look at that and you're like, man, human beings sometimes suck a lot, but there's also some pretty cool stuff to this whole being human thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to repeat ourselves the whole time, but I really was just blown away by not only how good this thing was, but just also how, again, like evolutionary that this mm-hmm. thing turns out to be, you know, when you realize that they filmed this and, you know, they filmed this during the pandemic, they filmed this with practical effects. And of course, there had to be a little bit of CGI here and there, but like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this that I was very impressed with.
Yeah. And they made use of circumstance as well as can be imagined. You know, that Teddy guy is apparently a stuntman too. And so he was able to rig up whatever rig they had over the pool to get his girlfriend, what was the kid's name? Jack, to get jacked over the pool.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then, the lady who played Radina, I guess, was, you know, in quarantine, there with that gentleman who shows up in the movie, and he also is a licensed stuntman. And so they incorporated that into the movie and they got some legit stunt work that added to the effect of the film. I just look at that and I think, man, more power to y'all. To your point about evolution, a lot of that stuff is true of the original Paranormal Activity, but I feel like they went even further on this. Like, how much can we wring out of being trapped in our apartment? And it is a soaring success. Now, this isn't Citizen Kane. I'm not trying to say it's the greatest horror movie ever. I'm just saying this thing is so much better than it has any reason to be.
Yeah. And it hits at the perfect time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the thing about it, because we've never been in a place in our existence where every human being is going through something at the exact same time like this. Like, we've all had Zoom calls over the last 6 months. We've all been quarantined at home over the last 6 months, or the majority of us have. I know there's been some essential workers out there and stuff that didn't, but the majority of the world has been quarantined. And it just seems like it hits at the exact right time, because I feel like that there is a character in this film that will define every person that watches it.
Hmm.
You know, some people are going to be the Gemma. Like, honest to God, Jeff, like, I would probably have been the Gemma.
I get that. not so much about you, but just that somebody's going to say, let's make this fun, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's going to be people that are going to be the Haleys. There's going to be people that are going to be the, you know, the Carolines and the Redeemas with the rocky relationships and, or, the, what was the guy's name? Teddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teddy, you know, whose wife or girlfriend or whatever her situation was, you know, doesn't think that it's real or, hey, I want your attention, you know, leave your friends alone. Come, you know, come hang out with me, situation. So it's just, yeah, man, like I said, it just, it hit at the right exact time in a time where everyone who watches it can identify with the character and can relate to what's going on, even if none of us are being, hopefully none of us are being haunted by some supernatural entity. We've all had those Zoom calls and we all have had those moments where something crazy happens and you go, oh, what was that?
Yep. Yep. Now my chair hadn't flown across the room yet, but again, if my friends will step up their game, maybe it will. I'm with you, man. These characters are familiar, but they also, I mean, for a 57-minute film, they feel fleshed out more than many of the feature films we've reviewed on here. That they're mm-hmm. less stereotypical than stuff that passes for actual big budget horror.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, well, we saw Brahms 2 this year. We saw The Turning. We saw, I know there's more, but those are the two that stick out in my mind as just being the worst of the bunch. And this movie blows those away.
Yeah. Yeah. This is much more fully baked than any
yeah.
of those.
Yeah.
So there's a great Collider.com article on the piece, and it's got excerpts of an interview with the director. And so I just thought I would throw some of these things at you to maybe raise the issue of plot points for discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things they mention here is that this creature is a tulpa. Are you familiar with a tulpa?
No, sir, I am not.
Yeah, it's probably because you had a life when we were in high school. part of my life was going around checking out scary stuff. And a tulpa is like a malicious group delusion come to life.
Okay.
That you create something by the mere belief in its existence. And there's some differences here because they call this creature the mask, or they say it would use Jack as a mask. So I guess it's supposed to be a demon, but the director clearly thinks we should also have a tulpa in mind, which is a cool approach to bringing the supernatural in a way that has not been worn out the way that the demonic has been. I know it's a demon, but there's like an extra layer, no pun intended, for the mask concept. Mm. On that front, you know, there's a call out to that in the middle of the movie when stuff is really hitting the fan. The one young lady who uses, you know, Zoom filters to give herself masks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's in her living room and there's a mask in the living room.
Yeah.
A couple of reviews I read said that they acted like that was a physical mask that was from her apartment. But I got the sense that facial recognition software on her phone was picking up Jack in the room and had assigned a mask to him, you know, digitally.
Mm-hmm.
What was your read on that?
I thought the same thing you did. Yeah, I thought that it was some kind of filter and that her phone or computer or whatnot was just picking up who this person was or who what this entity was
yeah.
and was assigning it the mask because doesn't it glitch at one point?
I thought it did, but either we caught a detail that's there and these other reviewers missed or we had a collective delusion and we're dealing with a tulpa here ourselves.
Yeah, well, either way.
On that mask concept, the director said that also, as you go along further in the movie, the mask of Jack is wearing off this thing. And so I don't know if anybody out there freeze framed that last jump scare. But when you if you do that, you get a pretty gruesome visage. And what he's saying is the demon is kind of letting the mask fall off and you're starting to see the demonic more underneath it.
Did you do that? Did you pause it at the end to see what the tulpa looked like?
I did not. I went back and looked up a screen grab.
Mm-hmm.
I did pause it to check some of the stuff in the background, like when the I don't know what you would call her, the seance leader.
Yeah, medium.
The medium, of course. That's what you would call her. Thank you, Derek, for being a thinking person. When she gets knocked out of the group chat, I went back to look at what had happened behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, there's a time when Radina is walking through her apartment and you see her boyfriend's feet hanging from the ceiling. And I had just barely caught that. And so I went back to make sure I saw it there.
Mm.
Did you do any freeze frame?
I didn't. There were a couple times where I rewound some stuff just to make sure that I'd saw what I thought I saw. But no freeze framing. And I guess I was a little disappointed that they went with the hokey. Well, not hokey. That's not the right word. But I was disappointed that they went with the jump scare at the end of it. Even though obviously they were doing like their version of the lights out thing where, yeah. You know, the lights, they keep turning the lights on and the monster moves closer and closer.
Yeah.
But yeah, once I saw that that's what it was, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But I also watch, you know, I also watch more horror than most people. So for me, it was like, I hate that we're going out like this.
You know, I think for me, and I'm with you largely, I watched it with my wife and she liked it too. So that probably helped me a bit. But there's the jump scares in this are pretty telegraphed, but I just don't begrudge them because of the nature of what the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the mask turned to face the young lady there in her living room, well, I knew that was coming from the time it popped up on the screen.
Sure.
But it worked okay. And then that hard jump scare to end the movie entirely,
mm-hmm.
I guess probably because they hadn't overdone it. I didn't hate it. You know, there's certainly got to be some way to be more creative than that, but I didn't come away despising it as a cheap gimmick the way I would have in some of the later Paranormal Activity movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the ending one was the only one that and I'm not even mad about it, but I was just like, I hate sure. that. Hate that they had to go to that well to end the movie, but I understand it. But yeah, again, I think that the runtime on this helps tremendously
mm-hmm.
because you eliminate the fluff, you eliminate the need for senseless jump scares, and you give us a great story with obviously, you know, not a satisfying conclusion. Obviously, you'd like to see Haley and Gemma make it out alive, but it ends with a... with the right conclusion,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's how those things are supposed to go. And yeah, man, I really, like I said, I enjoyed the heck out of it. And not even a couple jump scares are going to even, you know, they may have made my eyes roll a little bit, but they're not going to make me dog the movie any more than what I just did.
Well, yeah, they didn't overdo it either. You know, that yeah, I exactly. think would be a temptation to fill this movie up with cheap jump scares. But a bunch of the stuff that happens pretty much quote unquote in daylight. You know, the chair gets snatched away. She gets drug away. The glass shatters, which is a bit of a jump scare, but it's none of this is like relying on shadows or that you don't think something's going to happen because it's all kind of like, oh no, things are escalating. You know what I mean? Like it's all there where you're primed to look for phenomenon. And then when Gemma gets clocked by the flying Tupperware, whatever, at the end, that looked a little digital to me. But again, it just kind of happens all in the context of the film. And it's not the cat running across the camera lens that is supposed to give a cheap jolt. So
right.
Kudos, yeah, man.
You're right. Everything does fit into the context of what the movie is going for. You're absolutely right. It's not you know, we always complain about jump scares for the sake of jump scares, and that's not happening in this. So yeah, you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah, it's a mark of really well done filmmaking, I think. We have talked, and you particularly have the brilliant theory that M. Night Shyamalan, when he's at his best, is working within constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly Savage and his crew were working within constraints here. I wonder if we'll be able to see similar brilliance if the sequel is made in a world that's much more open.
Yeah. I also want this to stay like this movie and not become Unfriended.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting a kind of a quiver full of those things. That Collider article I mentioned calls this screen life storytelling, which I think has got to be a branch off found footage.
Mm-hmm.
And the John Cho movie is the best version of that. You've got Friend Request, Unfriended. This one, is there another one I'm not thinking of?
I apologize for the silence. I'm just That's trying to think.
Yeah.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah.
I think that about does it. Yeah, I mean, you got Searching, Friend Request, Unfriended. Of course, they did another unfriended with the dark web or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I watched that. That was not good.
Yeah. And that had Betty Gabriel in it, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Should have been better.
Real disappointed with that. I feel like that's it, though, man.
Well, I, you know, for my money, it is searching at the top of the list there in terms of quality. But this movie just, you can't think of it in that light because it just didn't have the opportunity to do what Searching did.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put this up there with Unfriended as, you know, like number two on the list. I don't know if I'm too excited or not, but this one feels like either the second or third best out of all those.
Yeah, I would put it up against, I mean, I would agree with you. Searching is one, and I would say Host is number two.
Okay.
And then farther down, you're looking at Unfriended. I think you enjoyed Unfriended more than I did.
Yeah, I did.
And then the other two, Friend Request and Unfriended the Dark Web.
Yeah, Dark Web is like multiple empty lines at the very bottom of the page.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, if we can keep the content, I'm sorry to interrupt you. If we can keep the content up like this movie and Searching, man, keep them coming.
Yeah, for sure. I've got one last question and one last point, and I have my bag emptied here. But I want to run a quote from the director by you, and you tell me which of the understandings of the movie is superior. Okay. So in regards to the ending of the film, he says, there's two schools of thought there. I think one thing and my co-writers think another thing. Basically, on the face of it, if Teddy hadn't logged back in that night, he would have been fine. He would have had a lovely night. And if he hadn't have logged back in, he wouldn't have come in contact with the transgression that was Gemma making up that story about Jack. When he comes back in, that transgression allowed something to come into this world and wreak havoc, or rather, he entered into that world where this creature's wreaking havoc. The other alternative is that we wanted this idea that Haley was a character who had performed lots of seances in the past, which she mentions, you know, this is just her first online one, but she's done seances. And as a result, might already have something kind of lingering in her apartment, might already have something attached. She might have inadvertently brought it in, and just by the medium kind of conjuring this psychic connection between the lot of them, that might be the thing that allows it to kind of feed on their collective summoning and start to manifest. He goes on to say, if you listen as you go through, there's this kind of croaky, weird, back of the throat, crackly interference sound that we use every time the demon starts to show its influence. And we actually play that sound at the very beginning in Haley's apartment.
Okay.
So there's this idea that something's already there just waiting. What do you like better, man? That Gemma messed everybody over, or that Haley put him in a bad spot?
Huh. You know, I was trying to figure this out last night on which one I thought was the right answer on this, because, you know, they even allude to it in the movie. You know, Haley's like, Gemma, this is all your fault. And Gemma's like, Haley, you're the one that made us do the seance.
Mm.
I think that it's probably Haley's fault. Like, Haley probably already had this presence, you know, this baby Toby.
Yeah.
And with the with the dark powers combined, they summoned evil Captain Planet.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Like with them being together, that made the demon grow stronger. And then it turned this Tulpa from a, you know, prank loving kind of person. Cause at the beginning of the movie, you see some stuff fall out of Haley's, what is it, like a cupboard or closet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately thought, oh, this is Toby. This is pranky Toby.
Man, that's good. I hadn't even made that connection, but that's right on. And yeah, that's right on.
And then we see, then as it gets more powerful, then it becomes more evil. And so I think it may be a little bit of both, you know?
Sure.
If Haley already had it, but had Gemma not enticed it, had they not had the seance. Okay, here's my official statement. Haley had the thing to begin with. Had she not called for the seance, it would not have grown powerful, right? And had Gemma not made fun of it, it would not have went after all of them. There's my official statement.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, good theory, and it kind of brings all the threads together. So I'm happy to endorse that.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting me work that out.
I'm glad you did. We were all glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. There's one of the beautiful things about Saw Something Scary is that Jeff and I don't really rehearse any of this or writing this stuff down. It's just we go at face value and we work it out as we go along. We call it in the ring.
Yep. Support independent podcasting, y'all.
That's right.
Hey, I've got one last thing to throw at you that I don't know that it can be proven or disproven.
Okay.
But I think, you know, kind of in a culture that is clearly committed to a secular worldview,
mm-hmm.
We're still not real sure if we're comfortable with that. you know, this movie, it's basically an innocent get together that goes sideways on an issue that is, it's low stakes. That turns out to be the highest possible. You know, Gemma makes a joke, kind of tries to spice everything up, and then all of a sudden her friends are dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I know not everybody here has the same metaphysics I do. I don't expect them to. But it just seems clear to me that we're kind of thinking through horror movies and sci-fi. Are we sure there's nothing out there invisible that might not get us? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is kind of a fun little thought experiment about what we really believe about ultimate reality. Because clearly we've still got some of the old superstitions left. If we're committed to them as superstitions now, they're still kind of haunting us literally.
Yeah. Well, that's terrifying.
Yeah, right. In a world where we can contact each other around the globe instantaneously through video and audio, is it possible that we've neglected to pay attention to some things in the dark that might hurt us? It's an interesting question. I'd love to hear our listeners' feedback and comment on that, because I think, like I said, interesting question. I think we're betraying something of our suspicions or our remaining questions, maybe,
yeah,
through pieces of art like this.
Huh. As Michael Scott once said, I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious.
Well, this is a movie for a little stitious contemplation.
Absolutely.
Buddy, that's all the good stuff I got to say about this. We almost talked about it longer than the movie runtime.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's jump into it, man. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this?
It's hard without answering that in context. You know, it's not even, I guess this doesn't qualify as a feature film.
Right.
And it plays with time because, you know, the whole like, hey, you got 40 minutes on a regular unpaid Skype call. Well, this thing goes like 20 minutes over that. As is, compared over and against every scary movie in the world, I'd give this like a 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Considering all the degrees of difficulty, I'm probably going to bump it up to like 7.5 or 8.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, the experience of watching the movie in our historical moment is very much the 7.5 to 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, that's where I would land as well, is 7.5 to 8.
I don't know that I'm going to go back to it the way I would go back to other movies in that rating, you know, but
yeah.
But for what it is, I couldn't be much happier with this movie.
Yeah, I agree, man. I don't know that I'll ever rewatch this, honestly, but as a lightning in a bottle, I don't want to say the movie of 2020, but really kind of is, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I think for just the time that we're in and the life that we're all collectively living or have lived over the last 6 months, it's hard not to, again, like I said before, it's hard not to relate to one of these characters. It's hard not to relate to, you know, only being able to see your loved ones through a computer screen or a phone screen. You know, even with Gemma running to Haley's flat and masking up, I was like, you know, hopefully in 5 years, people will be like, oh, yeah, you remember when we had to wear masks? That was crazy. But now it felt like, yeah, that's the thing you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just for everything that we're all going through right now, I think 7.5 to 8 is probably the right way to go about it.
Yeah, I think some of that stuff is a little bit of it is sort of like they wanted to make sure they checked all the boxes.
Sure.
So when Gemma shows up at Haley's apartment, that elbow bump,
mm-hmm,
I think is totally not happening there. I think they hug each other. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's a demon after them. They're probably not going to care about the Rona, but it just kind of has to be there as a document of the time. I guess with my kids, as they get, you know, further and further into the horror genre, I may show this to them sometime and say, I know you were really young, and I guess I shouldn't assume in 2020 that I'll get the chance to do this. But when you were young and we went through the quarantine, this is what life was like. I could definitely see it as a time capsule in that way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I completely agree. And, you know, maybe in 5 years we can come back to this movie and watch it again and then get the context of being on the other side of this thing.
Yeah,
see if that would still holds up.
That'd be wonderful.
Which means I'll have to subscribe to Shudder again.
Dadgum. I'm sure it'll be out on some other service by then. They'll need to make their money back.
Yeah.
Well, did we see something scary?
Yeah, I think so.
Anything you would highlight?
Honestly, man, when Redeema, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
When her Redeema. Head is repeatedly going into the computer screen.
Oh, that's actually not Redeema. Redeema's the one who's there with the hanging boyfriend.
Okay.
I can't remember that girl's name.
Caroline.
Caroline. Yeah, she's the one who had the like pore cleanser on at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Caroline. And she's the one that made her... made her background herself, right? Walking around. Yeah. When her head keeps bashing into the computer screen, that's when I was like, oh, okay. So we're doing this, you know, we're Aaron Burr all of a sudden. Okay. So we're doing this. And then also with, the stuff with Teddy and his, significant other, you know, when you see her flying through the air and her neck snapping and dropping into the pool and then Teddy being on fire. Yeah, I think there's some good stuff in this thing, man. There really is.
Well, I mean, you've landed in the same neighborhoods I did. The time when Caroline's video goes back on that loop of her previously coming in to just brush your teeth or hair or whatever it was, that's a pretty good way to say something's gone sideways, but we're not going to tell you yet, and to build anticipation. And man, when in the chat gibberish starts popping up from her side in the chat window,
yeah,
I thought that was super effective because I was immediately locked in. Like, what's happening on her side of the world that is leading her to type nonsense characters in? And then, yeah, when we start to see her bashing her head and it cuts in and out, that was probably the most powerful moment of the movie for me. And I think above the weight class of the film, or at least what I would have expected it to be.
Yeah.
And then the thing I'd point to with Teddy, yeah, it was crazy to watch his girlfriend get quote unquote jacked up over the pool. But when he's laying on the ground in his barn and his face catches on fire.
Yeah.
And then the screen just disappears into like a steel of abstract flame. That was pretty heavy, too.
Yeah.
I'm glad to say we saw something scary.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm really glad that we picked this one.
Mm-hmm. You did, man, and I'm really glad you did. I still think that maybe there's a world where we picked a movie we talked about previously. I know there's reasons not to do it right now, but having seen it, it was a good film, but I think this one's better by a significant margin.
Yeah. You know, this movie has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
That's really something cool. Also, I want to mention this real quick before we pop out of here. Did you notice the timer on the Zoom call?
No, I did not.
At the top of the screen. Yeah. So there's a timer showing how much time is left. I noticed it at the very end. And it was when Gemma was at Haley's apartment and she's doing the pictures with her little camera. I noticed that it was like 45 seconds left on the Zoom call. And I was just like, man, that's a really smart thing to show. You know, I don't know. I haven't done many Zoom calls, so I don't know if they have a timer on them or not. But I was just thinking, like, man, that's a really smart thing to do. The only thing is that it almost shows you, like, hey, with 3 seconds left in this thing, we're going to show you that demon, and then we're going off.
Sure.
But besides that, I just thought it was a really fun little Easter egg or tidbit there.
Well, the ending of the movie, I thought was, when they show the credits, rather, I thought was super well done, too.
Yes, I agree.
I thought that was super clever. And I don't know if what that does for the story. Like, are we supposed to believe that all those people were in the call watching this happen and Jack only got to some of them? I don't know. But whatever it is, I thought it was a clever use of context.
Yeah. Before I realized that it was the credits, I thought that little baby Toby had gotten a hold of her contacts list and was just sending it out to more people.
Yeah.
That's what I assumed was going to happen. And then I realized, oh, no, dang, that's the actual crew. That's really clever to do that.
Yeah.
Hey, one more thing. And I just thought about this when you were telling me about Savage's video, or we were discussing Savage's video. Was there ever a moment in this thing where you thought, oh, they're all playing a joke on Haley?
No, I'm too gullible, man. I'm too willing to believe as the horror uncle. Yeah. I was in the whole time.
I think they did it the right way, the way they did it. But I also could have easily seen them just going, you know, going the same way that Rob Savage did with his video and all these people being in on the joke.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe that's going to show up in the sequel. Maybe take it less supernatural.
Of course, I mean, it would be kind of hard once Haley's chair, you know, went across the room and she got drug into, she got drug Katie Featherston style down the hallway. But up until then, I was still like, I wonder if this is a rib.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a, That's a more clever way, I guess, to hold suspicions about the movie. But I this movie just had me in. The only thing that I, at any point, that kind of took me out of it was why nobody called 911.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I'm just happy to not ask that question, because in that world, 911 doesn't exist and demons do. And I enjoyed the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there are a couple things that you could criticize, but I don't feel like we even need to, man. Mm-hmm. This movie was great, and I'm very excited that we got to watch it. And I hope that all of our listeners will watch it as well.
For sure.
So let us know what you thought about this movie. If you've seen it, if you haven't, you should go see it. Probably should have seen it before you listen to this episode, but you do you, boo-boo. This is a weird year, and I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. But let us know what you thought about the movie. Go to Facebook and go to our Facebook group, We Saw Something Scary, and let us know what you liked, what you disliked. Let us know what you liked and disliked about this episode. Also, if you would be so kind to go to Apple Podcasts and give us those 5-star reviews so that more horror lovers can discover the greatest horror podcast in the history of podcasts. We would be greatly appreciative of that as well. And then finally, if you'd like to partner up with us monetarily, we would love that also. And you can do that at patreon.com/scarypodcast. And there are 4 different tiers of that. 3 of those tiers will get you the bonus episodes that Jeff was talking about. Normally, there's 1 a month, possibly 2 a month if Jeff ever gets to Paranormal Activity Tokyo Drift.
That's fine.
But they're definitely worth your time. So patreon.com/scarypodcast for that. We haven't done this in a while, but I do want to mention a big special thank you to my buddy Ryan Brewer for our intro music, our outro music, the music that we have here. He is a very talented singer-songwriter, and he just came out with a brand new album a couple weeks ago called Exorcism, which is poignant for our podcast. And you can find that over at RyanMBrewer.com. And I think you'll enjoy it. And I think that it would be great for our listeners to go support my boy that way. So head on over to RyanMBrewer.com, or you can go to Bandcamp and search for Ryan M. Brewer and get it that way. But it's a great little album. I've been listening to it pretty much nonstop since it came out. So do it up. All right. What are we doing next week, Jeff?
I'm not sure that we've picked anything out yet.
Okay. I don't think we have either. We'll figure that out, and we'll let you know, and we will be back next week with a brand new episode of Sauce of the Scary. Until then, though, he's at Right Jeff, I'm at Derek Zoo, and we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We'll see you guys back here next week. Bye-bye, man.